Good afternoon. I'm Warren Giroux of Sightline Wealth Management. I'm here today with our continuing series of Smart Money Manager interviews. Today we have Jay Balla, founder, CEO, and senior portfolio manager of AIP Asset Management. AIP is one of the funds distributed by our sister company, Nine Point Partners, and is one of the constituent funds in the Nine Point Alternative Income Fund. Welcome, Jay. We're glad you were able to take the time to join us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Warren.
So before we get into details of your investment process, Jay, can we have you give us a basic description of your current portfolio? Tell our listeners a little bit about the AIP pedigree, how long you've been around, how many employees you have, and so forth. What your corporate philosophy may be, for example.
Sure. So AIP, we've been around since 2013. We're going on to our seventh year as a track record of running the AIP convertible private debt fund. And just to kind of give you a broad overview of what that fund actually does, we think the name is quite descriptive in that it is convertible debt, but it's private debt. And so what does that truly mean? So you can think of it in two contexts. You can either think of it as a typical private debt fund with all of the downside protection and the collateral coverage, but the key difference being we lend predominantly to publicly traded companies, and all of our loans are convertible into publicly traded shares, which simply means that we're able to capture a larger amount of the upside in the event that the company is able to execute on its plans. So that's one way of thinking about it, and it's a bit of a win-win situation in that our investors get a higher alpha generation or greater returns, but it's also a win for the company in that most of our financing goes to acquisition financing. And so what the company and management actually get out of this is if they execute well on their plan, what they end up with is, you know, within 12 to 18 months, what they get is a much, much larger company. But it is completely delevered because as that stock price has continued to rally, you know, we would sell into that. We would convert slowly, we would sell, and we would completely delever the company over the period of that time. So it's a real win-win for both of us. The other way that people have looked at it is, you know, we're sort of a typical convertible debt fund. But all the loans are senior and they're secured and they're backed by collateral. So, you know, it's a two-step process. We don't do any investment without looking at those two angles. So, you know, rule number one is we don't go forward if we do our due diligence and find out that there is not sufficient collateral to cover our loan. So meaning if we give you a $2 million loan, we need about $4 million in collateral to keep that sort of LTV ratio about 50-50. And then goal number two is we have to look at it and say, look, in the next sort of 12 to 24 months, is this a stock market story? Is this something that that the stock market is going to find interesting? And if those two aren't triggered, meaning, you know, we don't have checkboxes next to both of those, we say no. If we, you know, if we think that there is a good chance of both happening, then we say yes. And obviously, look, I mean, you know, our due diligence criteria is quite stringent, so we end up turning down a lot more companies than we accept. And that is something that has worked very well for us over the past 6 years. In terms of AIP, we're about 10 employees right now. And if you just look at the core skill sets of what it would take to make sure a strategy like this was executed well, and, you know, by looking at our track record, I think you can tell that, you know, the returns have been very good over the last 6 years. And those two skill sets really is what me and my partner really bring to the table. So like I had said, you know, mission number one is principal protection. And it is still in the private debt universe. So my partner, Alex, comes from that world of lending. So, you know, he has been PM at BMO. He was senior vice president at Third Eye Capital. And he's just got decades and decades of experience lending to companies, underwriting to companies, going through workouts, doing monitoring. So that's his world. And that's what really adds to the to the principal protection. My area of the world really came from the equity side of the world. So I had started my career working for a very large family office here in Toronto. I was working in equity research at an investment bank here in Toronto, and then I joined a hedge fund here in Toronto as well. So my background has really come from the equity side of the world, and really this fund is the combination of both of our skill sets.
But Jay, if we can, let's talk about a little bit about the details of a loan, for example. So you have a company that hits the first two checkbox you talked about. So describe for our listeners the due diligence process. What goes into that process before you actually advance funds for a loan?
Sure. So, I mean, like, you know, we want to talk about the whole loan origination process. It all starts with basically being introduced to management. We have a conversation with management. We do some preliminary due diligence just to sort of kick the tires and say, okay, look, you know, just as a rough measure based on saying, is there enough collateral here? Does this sort of make sense? You know, if we can kind of get our heads wrapped around that, you know, we go to the next step, which is, you know, we'll issue them a formal term sheet. We'll negotiate terms, which takes a couple of weeks. And once that's signed off, then the real due diligence process starts, and that due diligence process is robust. It usually takes, you know, somewhere between 2 to 4 weeks, depending on the company, and that is the full gamut. So we do both an internal due diligence, which is what AIP does internally. We also hire third-party experts to do a complementary due diligence, and that would include things like collateral due diligence, business due diligence, or business risk due diligence. So, I mean, like, we want to take a look at every single angle possible and say, okay, look, these are the risks we've all isolated. And the reason we do it in two parties, both internal and we've hired third-party experts, is that the belief is both parties cannot simultaneously make the same mistakes. So we would catch some mistakes they've made, they would catch some mistakes we've made. And combined, we believe that there's a good way of sort of structuring that risk. And then once we've identified those risks, we can go back to management and find ways to mitigate those risks. So, I mean, that is an extensive process. It takes, like I said, you know, sort of 2 to 4 weeks, you know, and then we do legals. And that legal paperwork is, you know, it's proprietary. It is done in-house by our legal counsel. And that usually takes a couple of weeks as well. And then once that's done, you know, that's where Alex and his team really does the whole monitoring process. So the monitoring process really is, you know, at the very least, every month we'll have a call with management. We'll evaluate their business plan and their financial model against the actual results. And if there are variances from those projections, then we'll obviously speak to management and understand why those events had occurred. And so, you know, we like to stay on top of things because, you know, we always say before a company goes into bankruptcy or before it runs into significant issues, there's usually 12 months of pain that this company goes through, meaning if they're consistently missing all of their targets, you know, month one, month two, month three, and every single month, we want to get ahead of that. We want to, you know, somewhere along that line, we want to say, look, things just aren't working out. You know, let's talk about a different exit. You know, I know we had planned for sort of that 12 to 18 month exit. Now let's talk about maybe finding an adequate solution to shorten that down because, you know, we're not happy, you're not happy, you know, we need to find a way out of this. So that, again, that monitoring process is robust. So we do collateral tracking because we want to know that the value of that collateral still contains the same value that we had when we gave the loan out a few months ago. We want to look at financial reporting, we do covenant testing, and then we do audits and ad hoc appraisals if we are concerned. So that is the general overview of the process.
Okay, what typically, what kind of loans do you, or sectors are you interested in? Is it resource sector? Is it industrial, manufacturing?
That's a very good question. So the answer is we are industry agnostic. But that being said, we still want that two-step process, that two-stage process. So one is, you know, we obviously want the collateral. And like I said, number two is we want to know that this is going to be a stock market story. So a lot of the loans that we do and the pipeline that we have is geared towards whatever is relatively attractive in the markets today. So there's no point investing in a sector that the market does not like. Like a good example of that would be, you know, commercial real estate. The market's very concerned about commercial real estate. even if you were to find the best real estate company in that space and fund it, the chances of that stock having a lift just because they did a good acquisition is very minimal. So a lot of our deals tends to be tech-focused these days, tends to be in the medical space, things that the markets are more attracted to.
You mentioned an acquisition. What typically is the use of the money? So a company borrows the money from you. What do they typically do with the money? Is it for operations? Is it for acquisitions primarily?
It's typically for acquisitions. And the reason it's done that way is, you know, just to kind of flip back to the markets for a second. Like, if you look at the markets today, what we have is a large concentration of money into a very small handful of companies. So if you look at, you know, the NASDAQ, top five companies now represent something like 40% of the entire NASDAQ. Actually, it's 45% of the entire NASDAQ. And so what's happened is a lot of these small companies can't attract capital anymore. You know, like if you just look at, you know, where that market is, if you look at ETFs, for example, where, you know, a lot of that money is going into these passive investments into ETFs, if you were to buy $1,000 into the triple Qs, which is the NASDAQ tracker, out of that $1,457 would go to five companies. All right? The remainder would go to the bottom 95, and the bottom five companies would get 50 cents out of that $1,000. And if you look at the NASDAQ 100, even the guys right at the bottom of that ladder, the bottom five, are still multi-billion dollar companies. So now if you think about our range, which is that sort of, you know, sub 200 million market cap, their ability to raise capital is very limited. And so, you know, what we've been able to explain to a lot of these management teams is, look, the easiest way for you to grow is not organic growth. Like, your ability to grow from a 50 or 60 million market cap company into a 100, 150 million market cap company within 12 to 18 months organically, very difficult. You'd almost have to, like, triple your sales. So what we say is, look, we're going to fund you to do an acquisition of a real company, a company of size. So you'll take our money, you'll buy it. If you do it right, that meaning that the acquisition is priced right, that it is accretive, that it makes sense to the market, now your stock gets that uplift because now you're back in sort of the flow. Like, there's volume coming your way, where there's trading volume, there's some excitement around your company. And so that's the real value add. It's they get to do that leap. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So when you look at a company like that, do you actually and you tell them, you know, this is the best way for you to grow your company through acquisition? Do you actually take part in any of the acquisition negotiations, or is that something you leave to them solely and are on the sidelines?
Yeah, no, I mean, we definitely take part in those negotiations. So, you know, like, you know, we always say our money comes with value add, right? So, look, in some cases, we introduce you to acquisition targets. In some cases, we participate in those negotiations. In some cases, we help build that infrastructure so that, you know, you get more equity coverage and research coverage on your stock. So, you know, we are quite helpful with these companies simply because both me and Alex have also run small cap companies historically. You know, both me and Alex were founders of a few small cap companies. We were on the board of directors of a few of them. So we understand that market quite well, and we understand that infrastructure quite well.
So what typically do you look for loan duration? In other words, you lend the money and you expect to have an acquisition, or you expect to have something materially happen to for the stock price to warrant an exit strategy, but what kind of a time frame are you looking for?
I mean, most of our loans are sort of in that 12 to 18 months time frame. And so, you know, in terms of, you know, sort of start to finish. So the way it usually works is, you know, a company will come to us, they'll say, you know, we're thinking of growing, or, you know, we like your idea of sort of growing through acquisitions. We've got a few acquisitions lined up. And then we would help them down that process, right? So, I mean, you know, after funding, mm-hmm. you know, we would really want an acquisition done relatively quickly. We don't want to be sitting around waiting forever, right?
So what happens if it doesn't happen? What's your process then?
I mean, we've never really gone down the path where someone has said, I'm going to do an acquisition and then completely reneged on it.
Okay.
And also keep in mind, you know, when we fund, we don't fund the entirety of that acquisition line up front. So if we give you a $5 million acquisition line, we might only give you $500,000 to get going with due diligence and all of the work that would go into an acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you finalize it and you've got a finalized documentation and you say, look, I need the additional $4.5 million for acquisition costs and some working capital, then we would advance the rest.
Okay. So right now in your current book, how large is the flagship fund, the convertible private debt fund? What's your AUM?
We're a little above 40 million right now.
Okay. And how many individual loans or would you actually have advanced or are part of that book?
We have 6 loans currently, but we would probably be adding a few more over the next few months, just as we started capital. And
so you would, I would assume then you would have, normally you would have a fair amount of cash on hand to fund these acquisitions.
Correct.
Okay. So if you were to look at your fund in today's environment, how has COVID actually impacted your current book of business as well as your the future prospects for this type of lending?
Sure. I mean, that's a great question. So the great news is we have avoided a lot of the industries that were significantly hit by the COVID crisis. So we have no exposure to energy. We have no exposure to the airline business. We have no exposure to the restaurant or hotel business. So that's been really helpful for us in that we've really avoided the Black Swan event. But on a go-forward basis, what we're finding is an incredible amount of opportunity, and we haven't seen opportunities like this since sort of that 2008 crisis. Because, I mean, 2 things have happened, and, you know, it's even better in some ways than that 2008 crisis, and that what's been very interesting is, and I'm sure you know, is that the stock market has rallied very significantly. If you look at the NASDAQ today, it's at an all-time high. You know, the Dow, the TSX, the S&P are, you know, within a small distance of getting back to their all-time highs. But if you look at the private markets, that is a completely different story because, you know, if you walk outside of your door, what you realize is most of the restaurants aren't open, a lot of people don't have jobs. The real economy isn't doing that great. So if you look at how AIP's fund was able to make money for the last 6 years, we basically benefited from the private to public, you would call it arbitrage, but you know, it's the spread arbitrage. So any company, an XYZ manufacturing company or whatever you want to call it, you know, as a private company would basically sell for, call it 5x EBITDA. In the public market, it would trade at 7 or 8x EBITDA. So you'd always have that delta, and that's where we would make our money. But if you look at the markets today, those multiples have expanded very significantly, whereas private multiples have come down in pricing, and the public markets have actually gone up. And so all the deals that we'll do going forward with new capital as it comes in is going to actually have far better alpha generation going forward.
So it looks like the opportunities out there are multiple, and I would assume, are they focused in a few sectors, primarily technology, medical, or is it widespread?
The demand is widespread, and so that's been really helpful for us. So, you know, for us, it's now just narrowing that down and say, okay, look, you know, where do we think the market's going to be 6 months, 12 months down the road? And yeah, I mean, look, we're obviously focusing more towards technology and healthcare, but we should also maybe take a look at things and say, okay, look, you know, what's going to also happen in 6 months? It's, you know, do we come back to a period of normalization? Do we maybe even pick sectors that, you know, maybe aren't a hot stock market story right now, but could be in sort of 6 to 12 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is really just based on that sort of price to risk ratio.
So how large would your loans be? Typically, you said you have 40 million AUM in this particular fund. and you have about 6 loans currently on the books. So how large would your average loan size be?
Yeah, the average loan size is about sort of $5 to $6 million. So, I mean, you know, it's a broad spectrum if you looked at it. You know, I think we'd like to say our sweet spot sort of $5 million, could go as high as, say, you know, sort of 10 and as low as maybe $2 or $3 million.
Okay. I also noticed when I was looking at the fact sheet of your fund that you had some months of negative returns. And I would assume that because you're in the type of market you're in, there must be some sort of accounting standards to regarding valuation, or in the case when you actually own convertible bonds, typically trade, I guess, mark to market. Is that how it works, or how do you actually, what's the valuation criteria for your fund on a monthly basis?
Yeah, so why don't we start off with the valuation criteria, and then I'll sort of explain what's happened with the returns. So the valuation criteria is, it basically falls into two buckets. So if it's a loan, even if it's to a public company, we hold it at cost, subject to an impairment analysis. But once, and that is irrespective of what the stock price to the strike price is. So let's say the strike price was $1 and the stock price went to $2, we would still hold it at cost. But as soon as we convert a portion of that or all of that into stock, then you mark to market. So all of the equity gets marked to market. All of the bonds held are held at cost. And then even for the stocks, well, maybe I'll just sort of step back a bit and sort of explain the returns. So if you look at the returns before 2019 and after January 2019, what you will find is that the volatility has come down very significantly. And a key reason for that is, you know, that 2019 timeframe was a very big year for us. You know, we had won a few awards. So we won the best Canadian private debt fund award here in Canada. So for the best 1 year, 3 year, and 5 year returns. We also got nominated for the HFM award in the U.S., best fund in the U.S. as well. So it has been a significant year for us, and 2019 also is the year that a lot of institutional money started coming in, including Nine Point. And what our institutional investors had made very clear to us is, you know, we don't need these sort of 60-70% returns. You know, we are more than glad to have a lower rate of return, but much less volatility. And so January 2019 is the beginning of a shift in that risk management policy. So historically, if you looked at 2018, I think that's what you're referring to, is if you look at sort of December 2018, we were down 6.4%. And that is a function of the way we had done our conversion capabilities and the way we had done our risk management prior to that. So if you look at sort of that June, July, August timeframe, we had very large upsides. We were up 7% in June, 4.5% in July, and then about up 10% in August. And the reason for that is, as I'd mentioned, is if the stock price goes above the strike price, what we had done historically is we would have just converted the entirety of the bond. So it would have automatically become marked to market, and then we would start selling into the market, and we would start realizing profits. But the problem with that is, obviously, if the market were to come down very significantly, it would look like a loss, but it was a paper loss. So what you have to look at it is, look, I mean, even though, you know, our worst month was 6.4% in December 2018, if you look at the entire year, we were up 28%. So the same reason we were down was the same reason we were up. Whereas starting January 2019, what we started doing is we took a far more conservative approach the way we did our conversions. So in the event that a stock price would rally above a strike price, we no longer convert the entirety of the bond. What we would do is we convert 5 to 10% of the bond. We would sell that slowly into the market, and then we would reload and then continue the process. So in the event that there is a large market sell-off, the impact is not as hard. So I think you can sort of look at sort of Q1 2020 as a reflection of that, whereas, you know, the market was down, you know, call it 15 to 20% in that quarter, probably one of the worst quarters in a few decades. we were actually positive. And it is those enhanced risk procedures and policies we put in place that has really helped us avoid this black swan event and has allowed us to limit our downside. And so we're quite proud of that achievement.
Is your focus primarily in Canada, or do you have loans both in Canada and the U.S.?
Canada and the U.S.
Okay. I was going to say, when it comes to your origination process, particularly in the U.S., you must get a lot of referrals and must get people to sort of give you heads up on particular stocks, I would assume. Is that how that works, or
is it all internally originated? Is, I guess, a number of folds. So, I mean, like I mentioned, both me and Alex have been founders of small cap companies and we've been board of directors. So we've got a great network of people that just naturally come to us, that talk to us. But we've also got the traditional channels, which are accountants, which are lawyers, which are brokers, which are investment banks that come to us. So it is a very robust originations process that has been developed over really the past 20 years of both me and Alex being in the business for that long.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners that would we haven't discussed that give us or illustrate either competitive advantage of your fund over the other private debt funds?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things that maybe we should just kind of look at. I know people look at the rate of return of the fund and simply assume that this must be, you know, incredibly high-risk stuff. And so, you know, I think it's always good to sort of touch on this and say, you know, we're not suggesting that the fund is a GIC by any means. You know, there's obviously some risk to this fund. But, you know, what we have to explain is, you know, our rate of return over the last six and a bit years has been about 38.5% a year. But we are not getting, we're not generating 38% a year by lending money out at 38% interest. So if you were to do an attribution analysis, what you will understand is that 21% of those returns comes from interest income, and 79% of those returns comes from equity upside. So if you just run the numbers on that, you know, what you'll notice is our typical loans are somewhere between sort of 8 to 12%. So, you know, again, they're not bank loan, low risk, but they're not distressed debt going bankrupt companies either. It is somewhere in between. And a lot of that upside really does come from our ability to add value, our ability to help these smaller companies build real businesses, grow their revenue base, grow their EBITDA, and become more marketable in the market. And so, you know, again, so I mean, I think that's something that we should sort of elaborate upon. I think a lot of people do get the misconception that a high rate of return automatically means incredibly high rates of risk. And, you know, we always say, no, these loans are sort of that 8 to 12% coupon, lots of assets and collateral to back our downside. But a lot of those returns come from our equity upside, which we help these companies achieve. The way you want to look at the AIP fund is it's very similar to how the rest of the Nine Point funds function. So Nine Point also provides a lot of oversight for our fund. So as an investor, I mean, you're getting multiple levels of due diligence and risk controls on the fund. So, you know, there's obviously AIP that does the internal stuff or the internal calculations. We have SS&C, which is our fund administrator, that then verifies those numbers. At the end of the year, we have KPMG that does the audit. And then every month, Nine Point has a robust oversight process. So, you know, we report all of our loans to them. We give them updates on every single loan. There is a number of reports that we give to them every month, and then we have calls with them biweekly. So, you know, they are really on top of this, and that really helps provide an extra layer of support for any investor that's coming into the fund.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, well, thank you, Jay, for taking the time. I'm sure our listeners have a better understanding about AIP and about your convertible debt fund. It's sort of a unique fund relative to the other debt funds out there. If any of our listeners would like further information regarding AIP or their smart money portfolios, they can reach out to their Sightline advisor. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.